they fall into their decline, the Assyrians do, and Israel comes to their peak, they begin to rise again. They begin to gain some power in the countries around them. I can't say this name, but this king, this Assyrian king, is Ashurnasirpal. He was a king from 884 to 860 B.C. He was probably the one given the most credit for getting the Assyrians back up on top of the country, up top of their power. His son, Shalmaneser the Third, not the first one that we read about with Hezekiah and all them, this is on down the line. His son, Shalmaneser, succeeded him and reigned from about 860 to 825 B.C. Shalmaneser was the first Assyrian king. I misspoke. Shalmaneser was the first Assyrian king that actually came into conflict with Israel, the northern kingdom of Israel. He was the first one that came into contact with them. Israel, and I love to go through this because it reminds us of these stories that we go back from youth and go back from our studies and remember. Israel is this northern nation in an effort to try to avoid this Assyrian country that's sweeping all these countries, forms these coalitions or joins a coalition, try to halt this Assyrian expansion that's going to swallow them up. A group of surrounding nations formed it. Israel was a part of it. Ahab was the king at this time, and we know a lot of history about Ahab because he was a horrible king. So much happened in that. That was about 874 to 853 B.C. But this coalition that they formed, Israel putting their faith in man, in the coalition of man, eventually splits up, and that's what allowed Assyria to keep on gaining power and to begin to conquest all the surrounding territories. But like every other country, Assyria enters into problems of its own. It has some internal struggles within itself, and it gets very bogged down in this war with Syria, which was another power that was bidding at that time for control. And they begin to have their problems as well. This allowed Israel to operate when they drop off and have all this internal struggle and strife and decline and war with Syria. It buys Israel, the northern kingdom, some time. And during this time, Jeroboam the Second, king of Israel, 793 to 755 B.C., was able to raise the northern kingdom to a status that was very respected in the world as a major nation in the ancient Near East. So we see how God sent those things upon Assyria to allow Israel some time there. 2 Kings 14:25. The reign of Jeroboam in Israel, it says, he restored the territory of Israel from the entrance of Hamath to the Sea of Arabah, according to the word of the Lord, God of Israel, which he had spoken through his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet who was from Gath-Hepher. So we see here that Jeroboam restores them to this pinnacle, I guess, of the northern kingdom. Assyria, with Israel, has this 745 to 727 B.C., this Tiglath-Pileser III comes in and marks the beginning of a renewed period of Assyrian oppression, another flow up. They're coming back to power again, an oppression for the nation of Israel. This is the Tiglath-Pileser III, also known in 2 Kings 15:19 as Pul, P-U-L. So if you read about this and you go back and research and study it, know that King Pilzar III. He sent out to regain the territories that were previously occupied by the Syrians. This king, R-E-Z-I-N, Rezin of Damascus, or Syria, that's this Syrian power, and Pekah, P-K-A-H, of Israel, which was an Israel king, they came together in this coalition to try to avoid these Assyrians. So you see Syria and the northern kingdom come together, and they try to get Ahaz, which was king of Judah, the southern kingdom, to join them in order to resist these Assyrians. Ahaz, we know from our history, refused to join them. So the northern kingdom of Israel and this king Rezin march against the southern kingdom. So the northern kingdom comes to war against the southern kingdom. So you see how this northern kingdom is struggling to save itself. It's joining with these other countries. In this instance, Ahaz refused to join with them. And there's quite a bit about this in Isaiah chapter 7. But Ahaz, against the counsel of the prophet Isaiah, he enlists the aid of this Tiglath-Pilzer, the Assyrian. In other words, the northern kingdom, Assyria, wants the southern kingdom to join them to resist the Assyrians. And instead of joining with them, he aligns with Tiglath-Pilzer, the Assyrian. This turns out, as Isaiah points out, in 2 Kings chapter 16, really describes in detail how costly this was for that Ahaz in the southern kingdom, King Ahaz. Because he more or less sold them out to these Assyrians, which kept them from being taken by the Syrians at that time, but it came at a great cost of tribute. It came at a great cost. They had to accept a lot of the rituals and the religions of these Assyrians, which we'll talk about here later on, were horrible, horrible people. It was a bad, bad thing for him to do. It cost him a lot. Now, Tiglath-Pilzer was succeeded by his son, Shalmaneser V, another different one, in about 727 to 722 B.C., when Hosea, king of Israel, had been placed on the throne by this Tiglath-Pilzer, refused to pay his tribute. More of our history coming back. That's when Shalmaneser attacks Samaria, the capital of Israel, when they refused to pay the tribute. So we see this northern kingdom backing out of their agreement, more or less, and refusing. And after a long siege, Israel finally falls to Assyria in 722. So looking back at a glance, you see a lot that God is doing in this time, a lot that God's playing out to make these things happen for his remnant that he's going to bring back to bring his son through. They think that the Syrian king Sargon II was probably who actually won the siege at that time. Don't know for sure, but we know that the thousands of Israels were deported to Assyrian territories because we're told that. And that marked the end of the northern kingdom. Assyria and Judah's relationship was quite a bit different because we saw where Judah jumped in and tried to gain some favor with the Assyrians in order to avoid the northern kingdom in Syria. So they're in a little bit different situation. They're feeling the power of this Assyrian empire. And in 701 B.C., Sennacherib, king of Assyria, planned this attack on Jerusalem. He's ready to take Jerusalem, period. No more tribute, no more this and that. You're ours. We're going to have you. But this set up the plan or the story that we used in our review that we had, and the army, Syrian army, when it tried to take Jerusalem, was struck by God, and those thousands and thousands of soldiers were killed, and they had to retreat and leave. That's 2 Kings 19:35. So he had to retreat from his invasion there, and Jerusalem was saved for just a little while longer. This Assyrian religion, we talked about how Ahaz sold out to these people to try to prolong his existence. This Assyrian religion was a lot like the Babylonians. It emphasized worship of nature. They believed every object of nature was possessed by a spirit. They believed the chief god was Asher, A-S-S-H-U-R. And all other primary gods whom they worshiped were related to objects of nature, such as the god of heavens was A-N-U, Anu. Baal, B-E-L, was god of the religion of the region inhabited by man, beasts, and birds. Ea was god of the waters. Sin was the moon god. Shamash was the sun god. Raman was the god of storms. Those gods are followed by five gods of the planets. There was lesser gods, greater gods, and in a lot of cases, even their own cities had gods. You can see that they were just a mess when it came to their pagan worship. We know that it was to the point that it was condemned by several prophets of the Old Testament. Isaiah 10:5, it was condemned. Ezekiel 16:28, Hosea 8:9, they were very well known and condemned by the prophets of God. But God nevertheless used them as his chastening rod. The nature of the Syrians was something that aided them in their success of taking these countries too. These Assyrians were known to be merciless. They were known to be savage. This became very effective for them because the people feared them. When the Hebrews took the promised land, the fear of those people preceded them. The fear of their God preceded them. And that aided them. Well, with these Assyrians, the fear of their savageness preceded them. And it made men lose their ability to fight. They burnt cities, burnt children, impaled victims on stakes. They beheaded, chopped off hands. These were things that they liked to do. But just like Babylon, who God used as an instrument of judgment against Judah, Syria became this same punishment or channel of punishment, judgment against Israel because of their sin and idolatry. So God used them. We'll finish by just reminding ourselves, when we look back, our story of Jonah, for instance, we can begin to know what Jonah felt when he was asked by God to go to Nineveh, the capital of these Assyrians that were horrible, that had been through all this, that had rose and fell in power, and had taken this northern kingdom and was, you know, plundering the southern. It just, when it came time for Jonah to go there, he resisted that. And we see that their attitude toward the rest of the world was just horrible. And we can see Jonah's attitude reflected that. You can see he was disappointed when Nineveh relented and went to God, because there was no love for the Assyrians in the world at that time. They were a power to be reckoned with. And Jonah, we can kind of see a little more behind the story of Jonah when it comes to that. Next week, Lord willing, We'll look at the Babylonians a little bit and maybe the Medo-Persians and kind of lay that because some things are going to be going on in this 400 years, and we'll go there next week.